Hey, everybody. Welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups, your one-stop shop for all of the reality television coverage not involving Rob. My name is Jessica Leese, and I am here celebrating Canada Day in a big way. It's been a great week for Canada. We've got Justin Trudeau, like, not being able to shake hands with people. We've gotten Amazing Race Canada premiere, and today's Canada Day. It could not get more Canadian up in here, except for the fact that we're not in Canada. With me, as always, is my fellow American and co-host, Mr. Dan Heaton. Dan, it's Amazing Race Canada premiere week. Happy Canada Day. How's it going?
It's going good. You know, I'm a little upset. I'm mourning the destruction of my fantasy draft team, where my team's finished 2, 7, 8, 9, and 10.
And meanwhile, I'm sitting here with 3 of the top 4.
Well, I noticed near the end when all the teams were like, who's going to be out? I was like, they're all my teams. None of your teams were even like in the running for being left. I was like, well, this doesn't really matter. I'm going to lose regardless. But
yeah.
Bad drafting.
Well, it's okay, Dan. The season is still young. And I think the most striking thing, and I think maybe our top story this evening, has to be the team that we were worried was going to keep pushing through the entire season and end up winning, much to the chagrin of anybody that wanted to see some women on the podium. That team's gone right out of the gate. Did you see that coming?
I did not. And even after they made their fated decision, I thought, oh, that's pretty smart. They'll be okay. You know what? But, you know, you could kind of sense it as the episode went along that things weren't going to go in either theirs or Kate and Kelly's favor. But hey, this is great news for the fact that, one, our odds of having a female on the podium are higher. And two, you know, there's the likelihood of an all male team winning is now 1 in 9. So we're in good shape.
Yeah, it's great to see. I mean, not that I don't think Anthony and Brandon would certainly have brought a lot to the race if they'd stuck around, but I do very much like this new era of people taking penalties and getting penalized for it.
Well, yeah, and it's one of those things where it's almost like karma, because even when you looked at the task, and we'll get into it more quickly, I'm sure, but it didn't look like a bad decision. But then, you know, the weather and everything, it was almost like the Amazing Race gods came in and were like, oh, you think you could take a penalty? Not this season. And basically a team that thought they even uttered the line, we're making a strategic decision. I thought, yeah, that is pretty smart. Good. It was almost like a meat block thing from the US season 7, though a little bit different. But I thought, oh, this is good. This is smart stuff. And I don't think it wasn't even really that close for them. It wasn't like 5 minutes.
Yeah, that was a little rough. I'm not sure exactly how much time it ended up being, but I think one thing is for certain, and we can get into this like as we kind of go through the episode chronologically. It seemed to me like I'm pretty sure all of those teams would not have made it through on the second try. And if they had not, then I think the penalty would have been a little bit less severe.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, you're looking at it, even though the second time was easier, you saw it still wasn't easy. Like Stefan had the extra support and he really struggled to make it, and he did make it. And I think so. It was no gimme. I mean, it was still tough. It really was hard for the first time through. But I think the odds were really good, especially looking at some of the teams and not to say, oh, they're so. Most of the teams are pretty physically fit, but the odds are good. Somebody, at least one, probably more than one, would have fallen.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But let's go up to the top of the episode. And we could talk a little bit about a kind of unorthodox starting line, especially when you consider U.S. Amazing Race just starts in random locations in L.A. now. So I was excited to see them go to Yellowknife.
It was gorgeous, too. That shot across the ice, basically, you have the big shot panning and you see all the teams on their like ATV or something driving up and John standing there. And now, I mean, I'm like, if there's a shot, I mean, The Amazing Race Canada in general does a good job showing scenery and not rarely ever feels like it's shot on a soundstage or at some mansion like the U.S. likes to do with some of their intros. And this was definitely a stunning way to start the show.
Yeah, it was really kind of what Canada is all about, I think. You get this beautiful landscape and it's very cold. And that's kind of that's the popular perception of Canada, right?
Yes, cold, snowy, a little dreary, but beautiful.
Yes.
Of course, that is how I feel all the time about Canada.
I think that's not inaccurate. Of course, I've not been to Canada in the summertime in probably 20 years, so don't quote me on that. All right, so the first thing they got to do, they are on this frozen lake, kind of miraculous, nobody falls over, but they run to their backpacks and then they have to go and find a plaque that's got a phrase in one of the 11 local languages, which that's kind of mind blowing. They speak 11 languages in a town of 20,000 people and they have to figure out the translation of the phrase. Now, overall, I thought this was a great task, except I felt like everybody was getting off a little too easy.
Right, because you saw the way that it was explained in the description, it was in a certain order, and then people went and did not use that order, and they still got it. And they're like, yes, here's the clue, and I was really... we did have a fun experience, too, of Ashley thinking that it was just a pronunciation task, which I also enjoyed. She was kind of fun the whole episode, actually, a little over the top. But yeah, it's a fun... I generally like when they don't just start the episode by introducing everyone and then spending 10 minutes driving to the airport, especially when it's only a 45-minute episode. So to make them do a task right up front was fun, especially when there was something on the line where they ended up in terms of the flight.
Yeah, I always tend to like this about every season of The Amazing Race across the world, when they make you use your brain immediately and not necessarily just your navigation brain. And really, that's not going to be a huge task anyway, getting to the airport in Yellowknife. This is a tiny town. There's not that many places the airport could potentially be.
Right. And so you almost have to make them do something else to have some sort of split, and then you can create drama up front. Because really, the way the episode went, we introduced everyone, then we went to the theme and the credits, and then we came to John. It took us a little while to get rolling. So you saw that really they didn't go through the whole effort of showing all 10 teams finally finish. Once we got to the point where we had basically five so that the fourth and fifth could kind of – or actually the first and fifth could kind of battle it out for that last spot, they just kind of pushed the other team to the side and we went on.
Yeah, that was great, actually. I thought it gave us enough time. Like, we're going to get to know these people in chunks. And – I was really impressed with the editing this episode because there really was a lot going on. But by the end of the episode, I felt like I had a good read on every single team that was there.
Yeah, and it's good too. It's premieres are tough to edit. Like if you don't do, and they rarely ever do on any, or at least the U.S. and Canada, 90-minute premiere, you've really got, and those sometimes feel baggy. So it's almost like it's better to have it short. But if you edit it wrong, or if there's a task that's boring, like, I mean, the second roadblock wasn't boring. But they didn't. That roadblock was the less spectacular, and they didn't waste any time on anything. Any task that didn't seem to have a direct effect, they just blew by. And with 10 teams versus 12, I do think the benefit of that compared to last season. Last season, I remember at the beginning being kind of overwhelmed by the 12 teams. 10, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, it was. I think it was kind of the sweet spot. I think anytime somebody was having trouble with something, they had room to show it. So, you know, we don't have to see every single team driving to the airport, but we do have to see Jillian being Jillian, apparently. For that, you know, again, we did not watch Big Brother Canada. We're going to try to get Jordan Parhar on here in these early seasons to tell us a little bit more about how things went down on Big Brother Canada. But I got to say, I was not prepared for this. I was not prepared for Jillian.
Neither was I. I mean, and I know Big Brother is a very different show than The Amazing Race, but it wasn't that they were really bickering. Like, you know, you see people, couples or exes that come on and bicker. It was more that she was just kind of this is a bit of an overstatement, but losing her mind a bit. Like, they're just driving it. She's like, she's very manic. And that happened pretty much throughout the episode. And which is interesting because they did so well that, you know, she was kind of losing it, but then they were still powering ahead most of the way.
Yeah, she was. Well, I think the dynamic here, it seemed to me it was very, very Brendan and Rachel.
Yeah, like he's kind of he powered through that first roadblock. But yeah, he seems to be just kind of like, especially with the exes, he doesn't have to be as much that way where he doesn't have to hold her hand and be like, oh, it's OK, baby, or whatever. He just kind of rolls his eyes like, yeah, let's just keep going. It's a bit of a different dynamic, but I definitely see a comparison.
Yeah, I'm going to be very interested to see what happens once the race actually gets more intense, once they haven't been sleeping, once they're off of any sort of schedule entirely. What's Jillian going to be like if she was like this the first time they got in a vehicle?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it was just nervous energy, but if this is how she's going to be, I mean, it could lead to some, I mean, I hate to say good TV because I don't want people to melt out every 5 seconds, but it's going to lead to some memorable moments. I will say that.
Well, we always hope for memorable moments. And the interesting thing is whenever we have a team that's coming from another reality franchise, and this happens a lot in the US version, I always tend to think that team is going to be a little bit better prepared to go on the show because this is something that they've experienced on some level before. Like the aspect of having a camera in your face and knowing exactly how to handle being media visible is something that they've already had experience with. They don't have to acclimate to it again. But it seems like in this particular case, that's not really a factor for Jillian and to a lesser extent, Emmett.
Yeah, yeah. And it's different because we've seen examples. I hate to just throw out Boston Rob all the time or going the other way from the Amazing Race to, you know, Natalie Anderson. People that definitely seem to come in kind of being very pretty comfortable with the cameras and they ended up doing well. But this, I mean, it's again a case where I know they did mention briefly on the show, you know, that, you know, they went into it. But like we talked about last week, I look at them and they don't jump out to me like Boston Rob made sure we knew over and over and over that he was on Survivor, even if we had never watched it. They don't jump out to me like they're the reality star team when we watch them.
No, and you wouldn't know that. I mean, I assume everybody does know that's out there with them, but you wouldn't know it just from like looking at them if they hadn't told you.
Right. And I don't think that, yeah, I don't get any thought that they would hide it. I'm sure they're just talking about it. And I doubt this would be a case where people might gang up to try and get them out, but it won't be because they were on Big Brother. It'll be because they're doing well.
Yeah. And they are doing well despite Jillian's approach. They're still crushing it, and that's really important to note.
Yeah, because we saw our Steph and Kristen had a really good leg. They would be the first place team the way they went, and they still were second because, you know, there was no stopping Emmett and Jillian. I mean, yeah, she even told the greeter before, you know, that she's when they got it right, she said, "I'm in love with you." I was like, wow, that's really, we're going all out right up front, you know, loving the greeters. So she's going to be an interesting one to watch on the race. But you do wonder, though, even though they came out strong, when they, like you said, when they face adversity, it'll be interesting to see how they do.
Yeah. And there have been plenty of teams that have come on very strong in the beginning only to get stymied by something down the road. And I'm thinking specifically of another media savvy team from the Amazing Race Canada history. I'm thinking of Hal and Joanne, who won several legs in a row. They looked like they were going to be the team to beat, and then they end up kind of fizzling out in the middle.
Yeah, that was interesting because, yeah, everyone, there was almost a case where people were like, wow, they look really strong, and they are. They're like ridiculously fit, but that's only one aspect. This episode, I think, with especially the first roadblock, was especially geared in a way towards being strong, and that's great. But that's not how every episode's going to be. I mean, John, of course, gave the usual spiel. This is going to be, you know, hardest race. You know, I don't think he said hardest race ever, but it's really going to be one of the most grueling races ever of the four they've done. But it'll be interesting to see if it's really that much overall, teams are going to get pushed.
I think it's nice that he's recognizing if they keep trying to top themselves, they might end up killing somebody.
Yeah, basically. Hey, I mean, that the SkyTram roadblock was no joke, I will say, in terms of not killing someone, but it's pretty harrowing seeing people fall like that.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, we might as well just move to the roadblock right out the gate. They fly to Jasper and they have to take this SkyTram and the roadblock involves climbing out of the tram and then doing this monkey bar routine underneath it to retrieve the clue. And there are many mitigating factors on this thing. A lot of rules. I don't think I've ever seen a roadblock with this many rules, Dan.
Yeah, it was interesting. Just, you know, you had to do things a certain way. And then after the first try, things changed and they adjusted it. But it was, you know, a spectacular roadblock. The one that even if it wasn't that high off the ground, and we had our people who were afraid of heights, but I'm not sure I would do well at that if it was 3 feet off the ground. I like maybe not three, but like 10. I'd probably fall off. It just seemed like the balance, you know, was kind of extreme, and it was designed to be this amazing shot. But a lot of times with premieres, you see things like they go skydiving or they do things that are spectacular but easy. This was one of those weird, rare, fairly rare things that was physically hard, also kind of hard in terms of like maneuverability and how you move around, and also super high off the ground.
It's interesting. I was looking at that and thinking it was like a combination of, you know, they've had plenty of bungee jumps before. It was a combination of like a really physically intense skill-based task and then also the kind of thrill-seeking things. I'm pretty sure that there's some kind of safety standard in place that would prevent the U.S. Amazing Race from having this roadblock. Just the idea of, oh, the only thing holding you up is a bungee cord, and if you let go, you're just going to bungee jump. That seems really, really dangerous to me. And I could be wrong, but it seemed like that's maybe a bridge too far.
Yeah, I mean, at first I expected they were, because I think the second time around you were kind of harnessed in a little more, but you could still fall. Kind of like they've done in various versions of the Amazing Race, where you're climbing up something, and then if you don't make it, you're like hooked to basically like a super mountain climbing gear or something. But the fact that this was a bungee, it's like you have already the kind of, oh, shoot, I just failed. And then, like, you could be afraid of heights. You're already up there. You fail. And to add insult to injury, then you have to bungee jump to the bottom and wait like hours to do it again.
Yeah, I was contrasting this, like, in my head, the thing that I was kind of reminded of, like, especially when we get to the point where Steph tries the task. I was thinking about when they had to do the tightrope walk in Singapore in U.S. season 25, and Jim fell off of it. And even that, like, that was terrifying. Like, that looked dangerous. But he just kind of had to hang there. And then they just kind of reeled him back in. And with this, if you screw that first try up, you are actually going to plummet. And for a second, it's got to feel like you're about to die.
Right. And the way that, I mean, that was one of those moments, which, and the gym moment is a good example, because you're just like, holy, you know. And it's with this one especially, it was like with her hanging backwards like that, it's almost like, yeah, even though she knows she's hooked up to something, there has to be this thought with your head hanging like that. It's even different than like standing upwards. This is just, and like you let go and you're gone. She was just hanging there. And the fact that she pulled that out was one of the like more like kick butt moments that I think I've seen in a long time. That was amazing.
Yeah, I think it's worth noting, and in all of the discussion that I've seen this week about, you know, was this a fair roadblock? Was this, you know, was this too hard for people? Was this too dangerous? The two people that actually managed to complete the task on the first try finished first and second. So I think that's worth noting.
Yeah, there's a reward. It's not impossible, because you've seen tasks like the one in the U.S. where they had to run up that pole and, you know, Tim and TJ did it forever. There are tasks that I look at and I'm like, that is almost impossible. I don't think this was impossible. It was hard. And also, you notice, too, with her, that she did it a different way than everyone else. She used her feet on the monkey bars and crawled across, which in a sense, it was still hard and it put her in that tough position. But she almost slightly broke the task by doing that, because I don't think that was the way it was designed. And that was smart. So she was rewarded for being smart and just ridiculously strong.
Yeah, thinking outside the box. I like it when that's rewarded. And you did see a couple of other racers try that eventually. So that was, you know, she's also very physically strong, but she recognized that you didn't necessarily need to use only your arm strength. And there's a point, like, you see Stefan trying it on his first shot. He gets about halfway across and you see Antoine looking out and saying, his arms are fully extended. I don't think that's how you're supposed to do that.
Well, right, because basically there's no way then he can shift his whole body weight onto the next one. He's basically just like stuck, unless he somehow, well, swung his legs upside down onto the next one. But that would be like a circus move or something. But it was a hard task. And that's, you know, of course, it took all of like 15 minutes. We kind of addressed this earlier. For teams, after last week, we thought maybe this wouldn't be the season of penalties for teams to start talking about penalties. Apparently, the rules book did not have a giant page that just said no penalties on it. So we're moving on with penalties, I guess.
I guess it's a thing where it's just going to be a fact of Amazing Race Canada that we're going to have to accept is that people are going to take penalties. Although I do have to extend my apologies to Kelly and Kate and to Anthony and Brandon, because I was watching this the first time at 5 a.m. I downloaded it the second I could find it, and I was watching it, and my sleep-addled brain did not register that they both actually did at least try it before quitting. If either one of them had tried it, had not tried it and quit, then I would probably be a little bit angrier with them. But at that point, nobody had any way of knowing that they were going to cancel the task at a certain point. And so while I do not condone taking penalties, I still think it's dumb. I still wish that people wouldn't do it all the time. At least it's a little understandable when they thought about how it took a full hour to get up there and back. And it was highly likely not every team was going to make it in two tries.
Well, yeah, because only two teams, though I think, I'm trying to think of if Stefan, he did it on his second try, but I don't think he had gotten through it at that point. But basically, most of the teams were still there. And they said it's basically three teams go up at a time. It takes an hour each time. I mean, yeah, and Kelly had just not gone anywhere. So I think that they're looking at it going, you know, we're not going to ever do this. Or if we do, it's going to take more than 4 hours. So I think strategic wise, it was smart. And it was really, I mean, just bad luck that really did them in.
Yeah, I guess so. The question that I want to know, like, there were two teams that got it on their first try. And then it looked like there were two teams that got it on their second try. And what I'm curious about is the only teams we ever saw trying it twice ended up getting it on the second try. But had we seen these teams take multiple shots at it, they nerfed it considerably for the second try. It's like, oh, look, now you get a safety harness. That's good. Would they just keep making it easier and easier?
Yeah, would it be like last season's U.S. finale when they had to do that leap of faith where they just keep moving it closer, basically? And like, eventually you are going to get it. Next time, we just put the clue right when you go down the ladder. Yeah, I think they would have had to, because you think of how many hours that is. Eventually it gets dark, even if the weather was great. I mean, I think some of these teams, it might have been well into the day, and then they still had to go and paddle the boat and do the roadblock. I mean, I think all of it was probably pretty condensed in terms of distance by that boat near the end. But yeah, I think they needed to find a way to make it easier. Now, in terms of design of the roadblock, it is a tricky question, where you have something that can take that long and then also be so impacted by weather. But it's tough, because it's a lot of these kind of spectacular tasks could be impacted by weather, but most don't take this long. So do you think it was fair?
I thought that they frequently sacrifice a lot of logistical timing that would make the race better for the sake of having something that's really spectacular and awesome to look at. And that was my feelings on it. Like, I don't know if fairness comes into it, but it did seem like having this task only three people at a time can complete, and it takes an hour to complete it, and you know that most people are not going to get it on the first try, or maybe not even the second. That seems like an awful lot of wasted daytime. Like, they've wasted a lot of daylight. The other tasks are very daylight dependent. It seemed to me like it was bad race design for not a lot of payoff.
I have to agree. I mean, it's not, I don't feel like, you know, it was the worst thing we've ever seen in terms of design, but it was flawed. it was flawed. And I'm sure that some of the teams, especially, you know, the team that got eliminated, Anthony and Brandon, they probably don't feel great about it, but it's tricky. It's one of those things, it's tricky too, because I get annoyed when the whole leg is like an hour or like an hour and a half and beyond the flight, because then you're like, well, this doesn't feel very amazing. This feels like, but the Canadian version, they seem to do a good job of often having really long legs. We saw it last season where Nick and Sabrina ran out of time to do the second detour, which was an elimination and had to sit out a penalty. So that is the flip side of it. When you create tasks and make the leg possibly more epic and longer, you run a risk of having more issues like this.
Well, I think the thing that the Amazing Grace Canada does very well most of the time is they have a leg where every single chunk of that leg, you are doing something. Where U.S. Amazing Race, frequently all you're doing for to retrieve certain clues is you're going to a location and finding a clue box. And Amazing Race Canada, almost everything you have to do requires you to complete some sort of task. Like, you don't just go and get the next clue box at the visitor's center. You have to paddle down a river and find the clue box. And you don't necessarily just drive yourself to a point and pick up your clue there. There's going to be some other component that you have to do. And I think that helps. It helps kind of make it more exciting. But it also, in the tasks, in the nature of the tasks themselves, even the ones that they're not necessarily going to be judged on completing, they have this element of, we're going to spend the whole day dedicated to this task, to this leg of the race. And some people may finish it in a couple of hours, and some people may take all day to finish it, and that's okay. And I think that's a really crucial distinction between U.S. Amazing Race and Canadian Amazing Race, is because U.S. Amazing Race frequently just wants to get them in and out as fast as possible.
Right. And also another thing, too, is I think it's going to happen a lot based on the fact that Chevy's so involved, is that even on this leg, they drove themselves. And I think that's another factor, because when you have people driving themselves, you're more likely to have them get lost. You're more likely to have all kinds, you know, who knows, flat tires, crashes, whatever. That's going to add more time to the leg, too. I really like when they drive themselves because it leads to extra things. The U.S. version often switches more to doing taxis, especially, well, partially in big metropolitan areas. So it's all good. I think there's a lot of benefits to this. Like, you even saw with the boats, simple task. We have Kelly and Kate don't bring their boat in, and they have to go back on the water and get it. Things like that, that are just, they add extra things. What you're doing is basically making it so it's not just roadblock, detour. We watch everyone do the roadblock, watch everyone do the detour. We get to the pit stop. There's all these variables. But the flip side, like we said, is that sometimes they can screw with the race design.
Yeah, sometimes they can. And this one, I think there must have been ways that they could have gone about making this a little bit less of a time suck. I don't know what those ways are.
Start earlier in the day. No, I don't know. I assume for safety reasons, they could only put three at a time. They couldn't do more than three. I assume that there were very strict things. And also, too, I mean, well, here's the question, too, is, I guess, yeah, it's really tough to do this task and really get around it in any way, unless, because I'm sure there are so many like restrictions about, I mean, where they are and how high they are. And because for the bungee, they want to have them in a certain place. So it may just have been this task only works one way.
And maybe so. And in that case, like maybe, and you know, there are so many variables to designing a leg. But in this case, it's possible that there were just too many variables involved to make this a watchable task. That's kind of my feeling. And I think especially with the weather stepping in and the weather kind of deciding for everybody that this is not happening. I think that is a particularly, you know, that's just one more complication on this very convoluted task. And I'm not sure it made for the best possible premiere TV.
Right. And also, too, it's like, how long, you know, from the race perspective, how long do they make people wait? Because I guess they're making the assumption that the next time somebody went, they would make it. But like we talked about, you never know for sure. So it makes it out to be, and it wasn't totally clear how everything worked because of the limitations of time. But it does kind of take the game out of the racer's hands a bit.
It does. And we did have, I had a few people ask me, and I apologize now because it was right after the episode aired. I haven't seen it yet. So I didn't catch who it was that asked me this, but I was asked if this is something that has ever happened before. Like, have they straight out canceled a task due to weather and just made people wait out a penalty? And the answer is yes and no. I'm sure that I could be wrong here because I'm just thinking off the top of my head. There have been plenty of tasks that people have not been allowed to do because they were weather dependent. I'm thinking specifically of a couple of fast forwards that were available. Most recently in season 27, where Justin and Diana were supposed to do a fast forward that they weren't allowed to do. And I'm thinking of a fast forward in Vienna that Jason and Amy were not allowed to do in season 23. But, you know, those being very optional tasks, that's a little bit different. But I do know there were some daylight dependent tasks in Amazing Race Canada last summer.
I think it was Nick and Sabrina. That was what I referenced earlier, where they got U-turned,
exactly.
And then they couldn't do it and they sat there for 2 hours. But then it was not elimination. But it obviously, at that point, they had that look in their eyes like, please just eliminate us. But that was one of those. And I think detours, we have seen it other times, but it usually doesn't have as dramatic an impact on the show.
Right. It'll be hours of operation or daylight dependent. There's plenty of those. But in the case of a roadblock where somebody's got to complete it before the end, like, that's not something we've necessarily seen.
Yeah. And it's possible that they tested things out and they just really underestimated how things would go. But the weather is a trickier case because you almost have to go in assuming, well, I hope the weather's good. And if it's not, if it was bad up front, maybe they had a secondary task to do. But once they were in the middle of it, they couldn't do that.
This is the hazard, I think, also of having your first episode start with two roadblocks. Like, if you have a detour, sure, there's a whole extra task you have to plan for production-wise, and then there's a whole new editing challenge, but it also gives people options. Like, make something that's going to be weather-dependent, you know, make that something where there's an alternative if you need it.
Right, because you can always, you know, there's always a second thing. Like, basically, okay, this doesn't work, you guys got to go do this. But here, it's like, just wait, and then, I mean, I doubt the show expected. They had to anticipate, though, a team might consider taking the penalty given the time this was involved with the task. So the two roadblock thing has become really common. I mean, often I think it's in premieres, and then we've seen it obviously in finales. And it always seems to be centered around some heights-based task. It's like they always want to kind of set it up where somebody, the wrong person, takes the task where they have to be up high. And that seems really common. And it can work great, but in this case, it definitely pinned him in a corner.
You raise a good point, though, Dan. One of the reasons I think they were okay with trying this task, knowing all the different variables that could be in place, was because here in Canada, people don't have the same stigma on taking penalties. Like, they're willing to quit when the chips are down. And so I think maybe the assumption was you're going to try it once or twice and then you're going to say, I don't want to stick around here all day. I'm just going to take the penalty. Maybe they were just assuming people would.
That is interesting. It almost like we've always talked about, well, the producers probably want to cut back on penalties. They don't like it. And part of it, there could be a small thing that thinks, well, maybe they don't mind if it's a little more unpredictable. And then you have the countdown clock that was going on for so long during the end of this episode. Maybe, I'm not saying they want them all the time. Maybe they think, hey, it's kind of fun every once in a while to have it happen.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe they just decided this is something people are going to do and we need to get used to it. And it's okay to design some tasks around it.
Right. And they figured it was worth it because they had this shot that's great for the promos of people bungeeing and falling and hanging off this off the train, basically.
I think it was definitely for the camera shots alone. That was probably the whole reason that they kept that in, even with all its weird little rules.
Yeah. And there were some great moments. I mean, it was pretty intense, but you know, it did have quite an impact on how the rest of the leg went, because really it came down, the whole episode came down to two teams trying to find a clue in a roadblock to see. And it was weird because they were like very far near the front, and yet you knew that was coming down to that.
Yeah, that actually brought to mind a season of Amazing Race Asia where there were a lot of teams who took a penalty and you would see them in the mix, but you also knew they eventually had this penalty, and then it ended up they had to wait overnight for something and the penalty didn't matter at all. So it's not without precedent for sure. So I had a question that I was just going to throw out there, but maybe I've absolved myself having to answer it now, because I was going to say, how do we get people to stop taking penalties? And maybe the answer is we just don't. Like, maybe this is how this game is evolving in this idiom.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point, because we talked about it last week. It was basically, well, they could raise up the penalty amount, you know, but if you're possibly designing the course thinking, well, this is a really hard task, if somebody struggles, they'll still have a chance. Like, let's say somebody can't swim or whatnot. They'll still have a chance if they take a penalty. Then you can almost structure your race going, we can make the task harder, physically harder, even if, you know what I mean? Like in the US, I feel like there is a limit to how hard physically they're going to make something. And the limit usually is the weakest person, or at least one of the weaker people. Here they can go, well, we may have four or five people on the show that'll never do this task, but oh well, they'll take a penalty.
Yeah, like nobody on Amazing Race Canada is ever going to be rolling hay bales for 8 hours.
No way. They'll take a penalty.
You know? Exactly.
They'll do it for like a half. They'll do like 10 minutes and be like, well, this hurts. I'm done. I'm out, you know, or something. But and if it's the extra task and not a roadblock, it's only 2 hours. But I think so. That's how it was last season, I think. But yeah, I mean, who's to say? I guess that would be a roadblock. But either way, it's these legs are so long, sometimes you can make it up.
I guess so. And they're also kind of fluid with how they enforce the penalties, too. Like sometimes you wait there for everybody to check in. And sometimes, like in the case of, I'm thinking of Rex and Bob specifically, you would just wait out your penalty the next day.
Right. So, yeah, it's not always clear. And I guess that could also be dependent on how other teams do in the leg.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, in that case, I think that was when one of the racers separated his shoulder or something.
Right.
So that was kind of extenuating circumstances. So they can also just vary it up depending on what's going on.
You know, maybe they're just a necessary evil and we're going to be contending with them for the rest of the season. I think that's how it's looking now at any rate. But I will say it was, I'm not going to say nice because I'm not all about the Schadenfreude, but I was glad to see that a team that took the penalty went out over a team that was perfectly willing to stick it out to the bitter end.
Right. That is kind of the poetic justice, though not like just towards Anthony and Brandon, but more towards the show itself. This cast may look at that and say, oh, maybe we shouldn't take a penalty. I mean, who's to say? I mean, I don't know if they're going to put two and two together and everybody saw how it went and everything, but it's possible this could be kind of a warning and we might not see as many penalties this season.
Yeah, I think it's really going to come down to who goes out right away and who's still left in it and what they're faced with. Too many variables, just like this whole episode.
Yes.
Yes. So we can touch a little bit on the second roadblock, although the second roadblock was certainly the less interesting of the pair.
Yeah, it sounded more interesting in theory. Like when they showed it and described it, like all the physical moves, you got to go through the woods, you got to rappel and go to the canyon and navigate. I thought that looks really cool. And then they showed it and part of it was the time. But I was like, well, this is really boring. I mean, because really what they did is they sort of showed Jillian rappel. But then they really didn't mess with that too much. They almost just like flew through it. And it all came down to just the navigation. And you had a few funny moments, people not understanding, well, including Jillian, not really being able to figure out the tracker. And you saw some things that were interesting. But really, the whole thing was about Kate versus Brandon, I believe. And whoever gets the clue first, the editing was seeming to suggest it would be him. And then it kind of flipped around. Or maybe that was, well, I was kind of losing either way with my fantasy team. But I just, for some reason, assumed he would get it just because they kept showing him saying things like, we're going to get it. I'm going to get the clue. And I thought, oh, this is a setup. But that was obviously not the case. But that was really, that was to me, the whole roadblock was basically those two searching for the clue and who got it first. Because when they spent that much time there, I thought, oh, the team who doesn't get this is probably going to finish last.
Yeah, and I mean, there were a few other interesting moments. Like, there's always somebody. This is a task that we've had in many different versions over the years, where you give somebody one of these radio trackers and ask them to find something. And there's always someone that doesn't understand how it works, and it takes a while. Like, you know, we saw Julie struggling with it. We saw Jillian struggling with it a lot. But for the most part, it was like everybody else just kind of pretty straightforward, not all that exciting. And they cherry picked the parts that were going to be interesting, and they gave them to us. And I can't fault them for that.
Yeah. I mean, as much of an interesting thing was just the getting to and leaving of the roadblock with the three teams that caravaned, and kind of how that played out going in, where you had the teams trying to follow. And then especially afterwards, where, you know, I might be jumping ahead, but we saw, you know, Fire and Ice, who we were all down on at the premiere, making a smart move and getting away and benefiting from it.
We should talk about that a little bit, because I think there were two teams that really surprised me this episode. One in kind of a bad way and one in a good way. Like, I didn't think that based on seeing Jillian and Emmett's like intro videos, I did not have her pegged as a hysterical person, and I was very wrong. And I also was very down on Fire and Ice at the beginning. We both thought they were a little too character focused and not very race focused, but they did great. I was really impressed. And one of the smarter moves was not to just assume that everybody that was going the same direction was going the right direction. And that ended up paying off for them in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, it got them basically from, you know, being with a group that ended up without the penalty teams going 7-8 or the last two. They jumped ahead of them and finished up in 6. And really, I mean, they were pretty solid the whole time. I mean, and I think, you know, it's one of those things, too, where you see a little video and you think they're going to be goofy, and they probably are. But then you watch them race, and I see them, and, you know, Frankie is, you know, like 41. And I did underestimate how strong she is. And I look at the two of them and I'm like, they actually look more powerful as a team than I expected.
They do. You have to not be blinded. I think maybe like turning down the color contrast on your TV might give you a better sense of objectively how they are as racers.
Yeah, because I mean, you look at Kelly and Kate, who did hang in there and get through the roadblock, but they kind of struggled in a way that I expected. But then Frankie and Amy, I mean, yes, they only finished 6, but they were on the second flight, I believe, and did fine, you know. And Anna and Tanya got lost a few times, which I don't know why that I kind of thought, yep, that's what I figured. But they hung in there and made it. So, you know, you never know. And we were higher on Rita and Yvette, and yet they also struggled as far as finding things. So who knows what's going to happen?
I think a lot of that struggle in the back end was down to exactly the thing that Frankie and Amy avoided, which was these people are all going the same direction. One of them must know what they're doing. And it turned out neither one of them did. So sometimes I think it's true that if everybody's going the same direction, that's probably the direction you're supposed to go. But it's always good to double check.
Yeah, no, it's not always bad to stay with the pack to a point. But when you realize the people you're following don't know what they're doing, as far as the direction, it's good to get away. I also, while we're kind of rolling through it, I know we're about through the episode, but I did enjoy, I mentioned this, Ashley, my favorite moment, I think, with that team was Joel is in the tram and he's like, she seems a lot more composed right now. And they immediately cut to her going, oh my gosh, and like losing her mind. And I found that very entertaining because it was just like the editors just cut and really had fun with that. But they finished fourth. So, I mean, she was losing it a bit, but they were solid racers too.
I mean, I think both Ashley and Jillian give the very important lesson here that you can freak out as long as you still do everything anyway.
Right. You don't quit the task. So, you know, they're yeah, I mean, and plus two, we're definitely going to see it. Like if you have a quiet team that just kind of like, yep, we're doing the race, they won't show it. But if you got somebody freaking out, they're going to every minute they freak out. And we've talked about, I think we've talked about this with previous teams in the past when you argue or when they get upset, we're going to see it. So we're going to come up with the impression like Ashley was losing her mind or whatever, but she might have been doing it for 3 minutes of the whole day.
Right, right. You never know if it's going to be, if what you're seeing is a slice that's, you know, the only time it ever happened, or if it's emblematic of their entire race experience. I had another favorite Joel and Ashley moment, too. I think this might be the team that, we have one of these every season, too, that the team that says these kind of amazingly funny things, and you don't think of them as the funny team. There was a point, they get to the second roadblock, and they open it up, and Ashley says, all right, it's a roadblock, and I'm so excited because that means you're going to do it.
Yeah, I think they're going to be fun, too, because he's so just like low key. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I don't know. They just seem to have a fun relationship.
They might end up being sort of like last season. It was Brian and Cynthia that would occasionally just say these completely hilarious things out of nowhere. And when we saw them going in, we did not have them pegged as the funny team. So maybe they're my Brian and Cynthia.
Yeah, I think I had Brian and Cynthia as the guaranteed team to go out first and to be not very interesting. And yet even, and it was, we were like had a sad day when they were eliminated.
I composed poetry in tribute to them.
That was the saddest day of the whole season for me, I think. But except for, you know, when my team that I picked to win finished 10th. But, you know, well, we won't go there. So is there anything else we need to get into in terms of the actual way it finished or the drive to the pit stop?
I don't think so. I think we've covered all the high points. And I think the great thing is that there were high points and we did hit them. And now we don't have to wade through another 10 minutes of, are they going to make it? Who's going to be there? Are they going the right way? We got just exactly, I think, the right amount of that.
Right. There was a little bit of the teams, but you kind of, like I said earlier, you kind of got the impression just that it wasn't going to go good for the teams that took the penalty. There was like a shift in the, like about the last 10 minutes, it, for me, it almost came more down to who's going to finish 6, 7, 8, unless some team gets lost by 3 hours. I think we're good. So should we do questions?
Yes, let's do some questions.
Okay, well, here's a first question from Matthew Bayless that he submitted today. Will taking a penalty and barely surviving make a team more likely or less to take a penalty in the future?
I love this question. This is a really great question. And I think, honestly, it could go either way, and I think that's why he asked it. But I'm going to go ahead and say that it's going to make a team more likely to take a penalty. I am not going to be surprised to see Kelly and Kate take another penalty in the future.
Yeah, it's, I mean, looking at that, I think it could go different ways, but looking at them in particular, I get the impression they're going to say, we can't do this. We're just going to do the same thing. Because we saw that last season. I think Nick and Sabrina took multiple penalties
last season. Yeah.
And they survived. I think they survived both times. I'm not sure, but they did not get eliminated that way. It was more just on a roadblock where they didn't do it. So there could be teams, and I think it would have been the same if Anthony and Brandon had survived too.
Yeah, it's basic casino rules. You know, if you're gambling and you win, you're going to be more likely to keep playing. And that's why most, like, slot machines, for example, are rigged so that you win just often enough that you'll keep on playing. And if you take a big gamble like that and you end up not getting eliminated, you are going to be way more likely to try that gamble again. It's not going to scare you off.
Right. I agree. I mean, there could be exceptions, but especially this is a smaller cast, but with 9 left, I think people still are going to think that they could beat somebody.
Yeah. I think even you're not going to be doing those penalty taking moves when you get up to about the final four.
Right. If you do, you're pretty much just asking to get eliminated.
Yeah. Unless, you know, and even I think every case where we've seen that happen, like Dijon and Leilani is the example I'm thinking of, where it's like they knew they were going home, so they might as well not bother wearing themselves out.
Right. They hit a point where we could try and swing across this device all day, and it's just going to be painful, and we're going to argue more, and let's just go home and not talk to each other for a while.
Forever again.
Yeah, not the best finish for a team that I did enjoy. But yeah, that seems more likely. That's almost more just like we're done. But for a team to do it strategically, it seems unlikely at that point.
No, it's really a very much an early game thing. It's an early game thing and a running out of Fs to give kind of thing. So those are the two circumstances under which you see people take penalties. And I don't think if it pays off for you once, I don't think that's going to keep you from doing it again.
Right. Especially if teams, you know, let's assume a team isn't a super fan of the Amazing Race Canada. The season they probably watched to get ready was season 3.
Right.
So, and every season's had it, but season 3 in particular had it. So that's almost going to teach you that it's okay to do it.
Right. It just builds on, and, you know, people for season 5 are going to watch season 4, and pretty soon it's just going to have to be renamed The Amazing Penalty.
Yes. I don't think the ratings will be as good with that name, but I guess you never know.
This is a nation ruled by hockey, Dan. So they're going to be used to it.
Very true.
All right. So Rochelle Mashinsky asked us to kind of clarify a little rules point, which we've touched on, but we might as well make sure that this is crystal clear for everybody as far as we can tell. She wants to know, are there different rules for penalties in the American version than the Canadian version?
From what I could gather, no. At least in terms of roadblocks, I believe when Canada started, it matched what the U.S. version had at the time, which is 4 hours for roadblocks, 6 hours for detours, which were originally 24 hours early on in the show. And then there are other penalties, like we mentioned. I believe the extra task in the past has been 2 hours, and there may be other things you get on case specific. But in terms of the 4 hours for the roadblock, I believe that's the same for both.
I think that's definitely worth clarifying, just for everybody's edification. And I think there's certain other tasks where we've seen tasks specifically give you the amount of time you have to wait if it's different. So that could also be a factor. I think that will probably come up as well.
Right. So this question, I don't think we have an amazing answer for it, but it does raise an interesting point that I'm sure people are thinking about, which is from Ruth Abraham, she asked, what happened to Air Canada or Petro Canada Gas for Life? At least we have Mentos. So what happened to Air Canada, Jess?
Apparently, what I understand, and I could be completely off base on this, I wasn't following it super closely, but apparently Chevy wants top sponsorship billing on this one. And we may see some Air Canada flights yet, but it's not a prize anymore. And we certainly saw so much Chevy this episode. I think they're getting their advertising dollars worth, and they're clearly the flagship sponsor. So I think it was just more of a Chevy wants the spotlight.
Yeah. And of course, BMO is still here to help. So that's good. That made me feel good about everything. And it's interesting. I also brought this up for this question. So this time the winner gets a trip for two around the world. They get $250,000, and they each can pick any of the Chevy cars or trucks that they drive during the race. This made me feel good because that means they're going to drive a lot. That means they're not going to be able to pick something they take as a taxi. So that's good. But compared to Free Gas for Life, what do you think? Is this as good?
It feels like a step down. Like, even though the Canadian dollar is doing a little better than it was, it's a step down for sure. Free Gas for Life was a pretty rad prize. And if you signed on to compete in this show expecting you would win Free Gas for Life, that's got to be a pretty big letdown.
Yeah, and also I should mention that they do also win the Amazing Race Canada, like John really likes to point out. So that I didn't want to take away one thing that they win. But yeah, I agree. Nothing against Chevy. You know, I'm sure these are amazing cars, and there will be something that I would love to have also. But I don't get the impression that everyone will spend the whole race going, I want that one. I want this one. No, I want this one. I think they would probably be more excited about the free gas.
Right, right. Although, you know, I think what we can expect to see on this race is we're going to see a wide range of interesting vehicles that they're going to be driving, just so that you can see the full spectrum. And you know that Chevy makes the Camaro and the Corvette. So maybe we're going to see some really cool cars.
Yeah, that's interesting, because they're not going to just all drive around big trucks the whole time. Or maybe does Chevy have a hybrid or like some electric car? Oh, the Chevy Volt, maybe.
Chevy Volt.
That could be interesting. But yeah, I think we are going to see some sports cars, and hopefully they'll be more exciting than the ride around the racetrack while someone drives you and go, this is awesome, like we've seen on the U.S. version a few times, which those tasks are ones where I just want to take a nap. So I'm hoping if they use a Camaro or something, it'll be something unique.
Right. And, you know, they did do as a leg prize in Amazing Race US back when Ford was a flagship sponsor. You could pick any car from the Ford catalog. And I think the winners did choose Mustangs, because I remember kind of saying, Dad, don't choose the Fiesta. Nobody wants a Fiesta. So, you know, nobody wants the Chevy equivalent of the Fiesta.
Yeah, that's not going to be one. They're going to really have to sell that one further on. You know, somebody's going to pick a giant truck or like a Camaro or Corvette or something, though. I don't know if they'll make a big deal. Probably in the wonderful reunion show, they will probably spend 15 minutes on which car are they going to pick, because if it's anything like last season, oh my.
Oh, yeah. We don't need a repeat of that.
So are there any other questions you think we should address? Because there's a few that I see that we've really touched on involving the penalties and the roadblock.
Yeah, I think it was kind of across the board that people had a lot of issues with the penalties and the roadblock. So I don't think we need to get into that any deeper. But we do want to encourage you guys to keep sending in your questions. And don't worry about spoiling us, because Dan and I, we will find ways to watch the show. Sometimes it takes us 24, 48 hours. But once you finish watching the episode, feel free to just tweet the questions at us. We're happy to take them. And we'll also open up a thread in the Facebook group for Rob Has a Podcast patrons, so you guys can get your questions in that way. We really don't care how you submit them. We just like getting them. So feel free to continue doing that.
Yes. And I also personally love seeing comments on the Rob Has a Podcast page for us, which can be at robhasawebsite.com, because it makes me feel happy. And of course, I know our listeners want us to be happy.
I like to think that. Sometimes I'm not sure.
I don't know what you're saying.
I'm not saying anything. I want to encourage everybody. There are many ways to consume this podcast. So if you guys, the easiest thing to do, if you're not big on commitment, is just to go to robhasawebsite.com and find us under Reality TV Rehab Ups, where you can download or listen to any individual episode, as well as any coverage of the vast number of shows that we cover across the Rob Has a Podcast universe, including Big Brother. We cover The Challenge. We cover The Bachelorette. There's just a wealth of great content for you guys over on the website. If you want to subscribe to us, you can subscribe under the Reality Rehab Ups feed, which will be all of the various podcasts that we cover that Rob isn't necessarily hosting. Or you can subscribe to the Amazing Race only feed, and those shows show up there as well. You can do that through iTunes or through any of the podcatcher devices of your choice. We love it when you guys give us feedback. Leave us comments on the Rob Has a Website page, or you can even leave us reviews in iTunes. We love those as well. And we love getting feedback directly to us most of the time. You may feel free to tweet at us. You can reach me at Haymaker Hattie, and you can reach Dan at
The Dan Heaton.
There are many, but this is The Dan Heaton. So we want to thank everybody who weighed in on the premiere, and we hope that as we get through the season, we'll be engaging with you guys more and more. There's one more thing I wanted to ask you guys, just in a little informal poll. I was covering for season 3, I brought back my blog, mostly because I had one former racer tell me that they missed it when I didn't do it in season 2. And so I kind of, just to humor them, I wrote blog posts every week. And something that we're kind of Like, I didn't cover Amazing Grace US in blog form this season. If that's something you guys miss, definitely let me know. I'll bring it back. I'll do it again. But if it's not something that's a priority, you know, I have a lot going on this summer. I'm getting ready to be a parent for the first time, and I'm trying to keep up with many podcasts. So if I don't have to blog, I'm happy not to blog. If you guys really miss it, though, I'll take the bullet for you. And with that, Dan, is there anything else we want to tell our listeners before we send them off into the Great White North for another week?
I just want to tell them to travel safely across the land. Or safely travel, if that's your preference.
Or safely across the land travel.
Yes.
It could be any of those things. Apparently, they are all equally acceptable in the eyes of the linguistics expert. So with that, thank you guys all for listening. Happy racing, and we'll see you next week.